Jackie, the quest for a new name for Enron sounds delicious.
Yes, it does, Robert. You know, Mr. Davis talked about plainness mm-hmm. in an American company's name, and I was thinking that Enron might like to go the homey route and just call itself Ken and Jeff's Gas House.
Or they could go a very corporate route and just call themselves Exron.
Or they could draw on Enron's natural gas pipeline roots and its history of creative accounting, perhaps, and call themselves the Pipe Dreamers.
Or they could try to remind us of the genius of those late-night TV infomercials and call themselves Enronco.
Why not buy a name out of the past with some kind of phonic connection? The employees of Enron could change their name to the Ronettes, or how about this, Robert?
Mm-hmm.
Adieu, Ron.
Or a name that might be in use but could be available soon. Enron could just change its name to the Montreal Expos.
Robert, let's turn to the listeners who always have good suggestions on this sort of thing, don't you think?
Okay, I think they do. Listeners, let us know, by email only, please, how you think Enron should be rechristened. Here's how to do it.
Send your suggestion to atc@npr.org, and here's the key. Please write Enron Name Game, catchy, huh, in the subject line. That way, we'll be able to sort them out.
The address again is atc@npr.org, and in the subject line, Enron Name Game. We'll read your best answers next week. Two years ago, at age 46, a former producer of this program suffered a health calamity. Richard Harris offers this advice for others in his situation.
The moment will be forever seared in my brain, literally and figuratively. 10 in the morning, February 7th, 2000. I was at my desk on the phone when I could hear my voice begin to slur as a vice-like pressure enveloped my head. I got to the nearest couch and then to the emergency room just blocks away. As I was undergoing tests, my face started to droop, my lips tingled. Then a pinprick test revealed little feeling on my left side. I was having a stroke. It seemed to come out of nowhere, but on reflection, months earlier, there was a hint of things to come. I'd had trouble walking back to my desk at work one day, where I'd begun sweating profusely. Paramedics were called, they rushed me to the hospital, but after a battery of tests, there was no definitive diagnosis. The resident neurologist said I might have suffered a TIA, a temporary mini-stroke where symptoms come and go. But it was only one of several possibilities, and I was released that same afternoon. Fast forward now to that February morning. Wham! This time it was the real thing. After the clot invaded my brain, I could no longer swallow, so I was fed by tube directly to the stomach. I had great difficulty walking, talking, and the strangest of all, I hiccuped incessantly for hours at a time. What triggered the stroke? Not the typical risk factors. I had low blood pressure, low cholesterol, never smoked. Until I was rushed by helicopter to Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore, I never knew I was born a bit of a freak. Two vertebral arteries on the right side of my neck, where most of you have one. The second and weaker artery tore and sent a clot to my brain. But I'm one of the lucky ones. 25% of those who have a stroke don't survive. I've also regained virtually everything I lost, and gained an important insight as well. When miracle clot-busting drugs were introduced 7 years ago, stroke was no longer a sure sentence of paralysis or death, but only 3% of those who can benefit from them ever get them. Why? Because people simply don't know the symptoms of stroke, sudden headache, weakness on one side of the body, or difficulties with speech, vision, or balance. And because a stroke is not often accompanied by pain, people don't think of it as an emergency. You need to get to a hospital, hopefully with a stroke team, within a few hours to get the clot busters and prevent the brain cells from dying. Everything in Washington comes down to a cost-benefit analysis. Think of the money that could be saved on medical bills, insurance, long-term rehabilitation, if everyone in this country knew how to eliminate those stroke risk factors, or call 911 at the first sign of trouble. Legislation is working its way through Congress to spend millions on a public education campaign. Such an effort could save many lives and perhaps billions of dollars. If you'll excuse the expression, it's a no-brainer.
Richard Harris reports more on this subject tonight on ABC's Nightline. By the way, this Richard Harris is not our science reporter of the same name.